Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, the second day of November 2005. Glad you've joined us. A lot of stuff on tap today, once again, as usual, and we look forward to spending the next hour and a half with you as we discuss some of the great topics of the day. But before we do that, let's go ahead and have a quick look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 54 degrees, downtown 55 degrees, Anderson 50, Clemson 51. Day mostly sunny, highs in the lower 70s, northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Bertrand Russell. Patriots always talk of dying for their country and never talk of killing for their country.
Okay, well that's interesting. Food for thought. Well, I'll tell you what, today's headlines show several things. One is two more Marines killed in Iraq, this time in a chopper crash. So this is sad news, more people dying in Iraq. More Americans. There's always been people dying there, especially Iraqis. The vast majority of people who died have been them. And also in Paris, riots plague Paris suburbs for the sixth night. In Paris, unrest spread across troubled suburbs around Paris in a sixth night of violence Tuesday as police clashed with angry youths and scores of vehicles were torched in at least nine towns, local officials said. Police in riot gear fired rubber bullets at advancing gangs of youths in Aulnay-sous-Bois, however you pronounce that, one of the world's the worst-hit suburbs where 15 cars were burned, said the prefecture that runs the Seine-Saint-Denis region. Youths lobbed Molotov cocktails and at an annex of the town hall and threw stones at the firehouse. It was not immediately clear whether there were injuries from the clashes. Four people were arrested for throwing stones at police in nearby Bondy, where 14 cars were burned, the prefecture said. A fire engulfed a carpet store, but was not immediately clear whether the blaze was linked to the suburban unrest. Officials gave an initial count of 69 vehicles torched in nine suburbs across the Saint-Denis. I don't know how to say it. I don't speak French. Anyway, Saint-Denis, how's that? Region that arcs Paris on the north and northeast. The area, home mainly to families of immigrant origin, often from Muslim North Africa, is marked by soaring unemployment and delinquency. Anger and despair thrive in all the cinder block towers and long bars that typically make up a housing projects in France. No trouble is immediately reported in Clichy-sous-Bois, where rioting began Thursday following the accidental deaths of two teenagers hiding to escape police in a power substation. Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy, blamed by many for fanning the violence with tough talk and harsh tactics, met Tuesday night in Paris with youths and officials from Clichy-sous-Bois in a bid to cap delays of rioting or days of rioting, but the unrest spread even as they met. Sarkozy recently referred to troublemakers as scum and riffraff. Okay, so police are firing tear gas and rubber bullets. Well, it's not entirely clear to me what they're really complaining about, but apparently it's pretty serious in France, the socialist paradise of Europe at the moment. Well, all of Europe, I guess. Europe, I guess, is a socialist paradise for some folks. Here's something else. George Bush is on the move again. This time, Bush unveils a $7.1 billion bird flu strategy. President Bush said Tuesday that U.S. health officials have found no indication that a bird flu pandemic is near, but his administration is in the midst of developing a long-awaited plan to combat a worldwide outbreak. Good. Isn't that great? Wonderful to have the president there spending tax dollars for things that don't exist. At this point, we do not have a pandemic. Evidence of pandemic is imminent, Bush told an audience of health government officials at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Avian flu, he says, is still primarily an animal disease. As of now, unless people come into direct sustained contact with infected birds, it's unlikely they will come down with avian flu. The president requested $7.1 billion from Congress to fight a pandemic, including $1.2 billion to stockpile vaccines. Sounds like somebody's going to make a tidy profit off of that. You know what I'm saying? What if you were one of the companies that was already making this stuff? I suppose you'd do real well. He wants to buy 20 million vaccines for 20 million Americans. The government already has ordered 162.5 million worth of vaccine to be made and stockpiled against the Asian bird flu, more than half to be produced in a U.S. factory. In the event of a pandemic, we must have enough vaccine for every American, Bush said. We can't waste time in preparing. Part of the president's request, $2.8 billion, would be used for the technology to accelerate development of cell cultures that can enable scientists to create a vaccine that could be given to every American within 6 months of its production. Wait, you know, in the event of a pandemic, we must have enough vaccine for everybody. We can't waste time in preparing. Well, you know, that logic applies not only to bird flu vaccine, it applies to all sorts of things. We can't waste time, you know, with the possible potential of any other disaster either. So we might as well start spending billions of dollars preparing for things that don't currently exist. I guess that makes a lot of sense, huh? It makes sense if you're a liberal or a neocon, which is what Bush is. It makes no sense to spend our tax dollars that way. It doesn't make any sense at all. There's no point in preparing for a fight that doesn't exist yet. And it may never exist. So, anyway, Bush compared a possible pandemic to the 1918 influenza outbreak that killed more than 500,000 Americans and more than 20 million people worldwide. U.S. officials are coordinating efforts to stem global outbreak with the help of 88 countries and 9 international health agencies. The president said it's imperative to ensure other countries are ready to detect and report outbreaks before they grow out of control. Asian bird flu has killed more than 60 humans in Southeast Asia, mostly in Vietnam. It has not yet spread from human to human, but the worst-case scenario outlined by international scientists, it could cause millions of deaths worldwide. The president believes, as I do, there is no certainty this will occur, but if it should, we need to be ready. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Leavitt of Fox told Fox News. Anyway, okay, long story about all this stuff. Roach having the monopoly on the stuff that says here, they believe that Roach may end up getting the monopoly broken. Government may step in and trash the patent rights. I'm sure that makes Roach happy, but it may be not. Somebody's going to get paid off in this deal with making billions of dollars worth of or $1.2 billion worth of vaccine for the flu. So that's what your government's up to, saving you from all sorts of grief, no doubt. Give me a break. All right, we have a lot of tax stuff in the news today. Looking at the before I go to this, well, no, we have a lot of tax stuff in the news today. Let's go there first. We have people complaining, and rightly so, about what happened in Las Vegas to Irwin Schiff and others. The income tax gulag is what Bob Schultz is writing about. He says what happened in Vegas must end in Vegas. 77-year-old Schiff being tortured with chain shackles and mistreatment. Imagine writing a book containing information so offensive and damaging to the government prosecutes you for running a fraudulent tax shelter, and the book is subsequently banned as by a federal judge, without the government ever citing a single sentence that is false, misleading, or fraudulent. Imagine having your business raided and records seized using a court-sanctioned search warrant that fails to aver any specific law you have violated. Imagine the raid is conducted by a platoon of well-armed federal officers that have no delegated or statutory authority to conduct such a seizure. Imagine then being indicted for allegedly committing more than a dozen federal tax crimes, each of which is predicated on a crucial but erroneous legal assumption that direct, unapportioned taxes on the labor of individuals have, in fact, been legally imposed, and that the government's prosecution is allowed to proceed without ever having to establish further legal record prove to the jury that such a law exists, even though the Supreme Court has ruled it must. Imagine filing more than a dozen legal motions over 18 months seeking to dismiss the charges for lack of jurisdiction, each one citing specific U.S. statutes and Supreme Court decisions leading to irrefutable legal conclusions requiring dismissal, only to have the government respond without substance that the motions are frivolous, and then have the court delay its denial of the motions until just hours before the trial begins in order to prevent any appeal. Imagine a trial where you are not allowed to question your accusers without the law or present evidence about the law, even though what the law actually says is the only question before the court, and your entire defense is based on what the law actually says. Imagine a trial, so to speak, where one morning you witness the U.S. attorneys emerging from a secret ex parte meeting with the judge's chambers about which you and your attorneys have no knowledge or notice and no idea what they discussed. That's what happened to Irwin Schiff, and that is a tragedy. It's a travesty of justice, and it's a tragedy that it would happen here in America. And, you know, I mean, you've got to go through due process. That's part of our constitutional, you know, freedoms that are being needed to be secured. And it's awful when you get to the point, as we are in America now, where the federal government just does what it wants. It presumes you're guilty and just doesn't believe it has to follow the law. And apparently that's indeed what happened with this particular case with Irwin Schiff and others in Las Vegas. Well, I hope they appeal, and I hope that the appellate court gives them the justice that they deserve because of all of this nonsense going on. Very tragic, very sad news for the day, for sure. Well, this morning, I would like to remind you folks that TyrannyResponse.com and TyrannyResponse.net is a one-stop place to check out what's going on in the upstate. There is an events calendar there under the events tab that you can, with some detailed subscription above for addresses and so forth of things that are happening here in the upstate. We also have the contact tab if for any reason get in touch with the Tyranny Response Network. Remember, we are looking for volunteers always, and especially now. We need a substitute for the Christian Worldview Show. We need somebody to do some uploading for us. And we're talking about 1 or 2 hours a month, probably. Well, maybe 3 or 4 hours per month. Not a whole lot of time, but if you can help in our wonderful project to spread liberty and freedom and truth across the upstate, we would greatly appreciate it. If you go to the contacts tab, you can click on any one of the emails that appear there, links that appear there, and send somebody a note and let them know, and that would be great. You can also try Chuck and leave him a message at 271-6761, and he will put you to good use in the organization here. Again, don't forget that the Tyranny Response Network is completely volunteer-run. It's a volunteer-supported idea and program. We have very few people who actually give us, on a regular basis, large sums of money or something that would allow us to continue an operation. We have no endowment. And so if you can even help out financially, believe it or not, even your $10 or $20 contribution every month is well needed. There's an address at the front of the TyrannyResponse.com website. We encourage you to go there and check it out and send off a check if you can help us out financially. One other quick announcement before we go to our first break, and that's the Worldviews Project has published Dr. Stephen Yates' book, Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. And it's $20.99 or $18.99 if you are a member of the Constitution or Libertarian Parties, plus $2.50 shipping and handling. If you want to buy the book, and we hope you will, please send your orders to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Stephen Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. And you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us this morning. Lots of interesting stuff in the news here. I'm just scrolling through my email box, and I found all sorts of things here that are of interest. I'm going to read a few that the research staff sent up first, and then there's a couple of stories that came over from libertarian Christians, too, which look very interesting this morning. This is from Mr. John Eidsmo. It's a quotation from him. He is, in my estimation, a great legal scholar. Did a great job on the Institute for the Constitution tapes presenting the thesis that was provided by Michael Perutka's organization up there in Maryland. When I read his book, I was quite persuaded that he is a divine right type, and I think he probably is. I don't think his public policy theology is that well defined, perhaps. Maybe he's a little bit confused on certain issues. He was definitely confused on the Lincoln issue, and he was seemed to be confused on a few other things, like how do you interpret Romans chapter 13, at least in my estimation. By the way, in order to clear away those clouds of that obscure the truth, Lord willing, we're working on our new book. In fact, just got the version going out that's going to be going out to the editors ready today. My new book is called The Theology of Public Policy, The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And it's going to be probably around 275 or 280 pages in length. Still working on some of the details here and there, but in general it's going to cover all the biblical aspects pertaining to public policy and some applied stuff. But, like, should we have a, why shouldn't we have a flag in the church sanctuary? Why shouldn't we applaud in church children or soldiers over there who are conducting aggressive warfare for the government? And many other things that are practical in nature, but also a lot of biblical exegesis and a lot of theoretical matters that we go over in there. So it should be coming out next, probably somewhere before March of next year, and be available to folks to get. There'll be a downloadable version that will be available first. That might even be available as early as the first part of January. We will see. Right now we're looking for people to review the book who have scholarly credentials and then can write an endorsement on the back. If you're interested in that, you might go to policyofliberty.net, my website, and just email me, send me a small note, and I may get a copy out to you. Just let me know where you're working and why. Just let me know that you'd be interested in reviewing the book, and we might get an advanced copy out to you. Again, we're looking for people to write endorsements and blurbs, usually people who are seminary professors or academics, could also be pastors of certain churches, somebody who's well-known. And the idea is somebody picks up the back of the book, because usually people look at the cover first, and few people turn over to the back cover. We want them to read the back cover of the book, and if they read it there, oh yeah, I know him, or I've heard of that guy, and someone who's relatively famous, I guess you can say, or has some authority to speak, and say, yes, I really like the book, and therefore you should read it, and to go and encourage people on the marketing side to get it. Anyway, Dr. John Eidsmo says the following, and we'll see what we think about this. We should not pray only to those whom we like. Excuse me. We should not pray only for those whom we like. It is easy to pray for the leader whom we respect or with whom we agree. It is much harder to pray for the leader whose personality is offensive, whose ethics are questionable, who takes the wrong position on every issue, or who is in the wrong party. Yet these leaders are also ministers of God. They don't necessarily deserve our vote, but they do deserve our respect and prayers. Now, see, this is a typical divine right kind of sentiment. I believe the Bible does teach that we are supposed to pray for those who are in authority. That's Paul's words to Timothy are that much. But why? Well, the Bible says, so that we may live quiet and peaceable lives. And I think you can imply from elsewhere, although it doesn't say directly in the Timothy text, that they might be saved. I think you can pray for people's salvation. I don't think it's a problem. I think you can pray for the salvation of rulers. I also think you can pray that they would leave you alone, that we could live a quiet and peaceable life. That is the purpose of praying for the leaders. It's not anywhere said that we should pray for these leaders so that they might be able to govern with all righteousness. It doesn't say that. Now, you might want to do that, you might want to think that, but look at the text, folks. It doesn't say that. So, and then beyond that, this business of respecting the office and not the man is not biblical. I don't have any respect for Satan. I have no respect for Nero. I have no respect for Bill Clinton. Why should I, or George Bush for that matter? Why should I have respect for evildoers? I mean, I respect that they are created in the image of God. I respect that these people are doing a job and have authority, and therefore when I'm in their presence, I better shape up. Because if I don't, they'll use their power to assail me, and I don't want that. But I don't respect them as being somebody who's, because of his office, worthy of special honor or some such thing in my heart. There's no way. These people are evildoers. I don't respect them in that sense, even if outwardly I'm going to show some kind of respect. Just like the scripture says, when if you're at the king's table and you're a man given to appetite, put a knife to your throat. I mean, you got to be real careful in the presence of people with power, because otherwise your life will be destroyed. So I don't like the quotation from John Eidsmo, and I think it's a wrong emphasis that we don't need to have. Let's see what else we've got here from the staff. Here's something from C.S. Lewis. The new Nero will approach us with the silky manners of a doctor, and though all be in fact as compulsory as the tunica molesta, or Smithfield or Tyburn, all will go within the unemotional therapeutic sphere where the words like right and wrong or freedom and slavery are never heard. And thus, when the command is given, every prominent Christian in the land vanish overnight into institutions for the treatment of the ideologically unsound. Yes, indeed. Good point from C.S. Lewis. Don't expect Nero to come out blazing and torching the city. You expect that he's going to come in a more clandestine manner and properly take care of us who are Christians. Here's something from Francis Schaeffer. Let us not forget why the Christians were killed. They were not killed because they worshipped Jesus. Various religions covered the whole Roman world. No one cared who worshipped whom, so long as the worshipper did not disrupt the unity of the state. Centered in the formal worship of Caesar, the reason the Christians were killed was because they were rebels. Wow. You know, we need to find out where that quotation is from. In fact, I may find out exactly what book that's in. That's a great quotation. This is one reason why Christians are killed, because they're considered to be rebels by the state, and states cannot tolerate any kind of rebellion. Good quotation. We're going to follow up on that one some more. I think Dr. Francis Schaeffer is absolutely right about that. Here's a quotation from R.L. Dabney. American conservatism is merely the shadow that follows radicalism as it moves forward to perdition. It remains behind it, but never retards it, and always advances near its leader. This pretended salt hath utterly lost its savor. Wherewith shall it be salted? Its impotency is not hard, indeed, to explain. It is worthless because it is the conservatism of expediency only, and it is not of sturdy principle. It intends to risk nothing serious for the sake of truth, and has no idea of being guilty of the folly of martyrdom. Also, like that quote from R.L. Dabney a lot, and he's talking about Christian civic duty, as far as I'm concerned, and what it really should be, and why there is such a huge problem in the American conservative movement today. There is no spine to it, no backbone, just basically going along with whatever they're thrust upon by the evil and pernicious state. So, good point from that. Here is from R.L. Dabney. Here is Greg Bahnsen, the late Greg Bahnsen, writing on Theonomy and Christian Ethics. This is from the dust jacket of it. It says, "The position which has come to be labeled Theonomy today holds that the word of the Lord is the sole supreme and unchallengeable standard for the actions and attitudes of all men in all areas of life. It also teaches that since the fall it has always been unlawful to use the law of God in hopes of establishing one's own personal merit and justification. Commitment to obedience is but the lifestyle of faith, a token of gratitude for God's redeeming grace. Jesus said, 'If you love me, you will keep my commandments,' John 14:15. Moreover, we will strive to teach others to observe whatever he has commanded, Matthew 28:18-20. Such healthy and necessary moral standards are surely not burdensome to the believer who bows to Christ as the Lord, 1 John 5:3. Theonomy views God's laws directing moral behavior to be a reflection of his unchanging character. Such laws are not arbitrary, but objectively, universally, and absolutely binding. It is God's law that you are to be holy because I am holy, 1 Peter 16, citing Leviticus. The law may not be criticized or challenged by us. It is holy, righteous, and good, Romans 7:12. This moral law was revealed to Israel in oracles and ordinances, but even the Gentiles show the work of the law upon their hearts and know its ordinances from the natural order and inward conscience." That's from Romans 1:32 and 2:14-15. "Who then is under the authority of God's law?" Paul answers, "All the world," Romans 3:19. "The law revealed by Moses and subsequent Old Testament authors was given within a covenantal administration of God's grace, which included not only a moral instruction, but gloriously and mercifully promises, prophecies, sacrifices, circumcision, the Paschal Lamb, and other types and ordinances delivered to the people of the Jews, for all foreseeing Christ to come." That's what the Westminster Confession says. God's revelation itself teaches us that new covenant believers who have the law powerfully written on their hearts no longer follow the foreshadows and administrative details of the old covenant. They are obsolete, Hebrews 8:13, having been imposed only until the time when Messiah would come. Theonomy teaches then that in regard to the Old Testament law, the new covenant surpasses the old covenant in glory, power, and finality. Theonomy also teaches that the civil rulers are morally obligated to enforce those laws of Christ. Whoa. Now, this is where some of us get off the boat here, but this is good stuff to read. Theonomy also teaches that civil rulers are morally obligated to enforce those laws of Christ found throughout the Scriptures, which are addressed to magistrates as well as to refrain from coercion in areas where God has not prescribed for their intervention. As Paul wrote in Romans 13:1-10, magistrates, even the secular rulers of Rome, are obligated to conduct their offices as ministers of God, avenging God's wrath against criminal evildoers. They will give an account on the final day of their service before the King of Kings, their Creator and Judge. Very interesting quotation. We don't think that the state has that role, but theonomists do, especially if they're looking at the age where there's a righteous government in power. So that's interesting stuff to read and think about. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us this morning, and we'll be back after this break.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This second day of November 2005, been having lots of interesting things on the show earlier today to talk about. Look forward to the next half hour as well. If you have a comment or a question and want to give us a call, do so at 864-244-9904. But before we go on to the stuff, let's go find out what's going on with the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 55 degrees, downtown 56 degrees, Anderson 53 degrees, Clemson 54. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 70s, and northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Edward Abbey. Truth is always the enemy of power, and power the enemy of truth.
Very true. States have power, and they are the enemy of the truth. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You will find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m., the second Thursday of the month, at the library on Augusta Road, just north of I-85. It's on the right, one block before reaching Malden Road, all visitors are always welcome. To talk politics, join us for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month in Greenville. It's a cafe underground just off of Main Street downtown. And in Spartanburg, there is the Liberty Aplenty meeting, and that occurs at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In on Thursday night. That's the first Thursday of the month We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. I want to make a small footnote to all this morning. Apparently some folks had showed up last night at the Liberty of Plenty meeting because, with good reason, they heard the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, announce that the Liberty of Plenty meeting is on the first Tuesday of the month, which it has been traditionally, but for some reason, we didn't get the notice of change from the Spartanburg Libertarians that indeed the meeting time was changed to the first Thursday of the month. So it's tomorrow night, not last night, and some of you found out already when you went there that it wasn't last night. Our apologies, we just didn't get the notification from the Libertarian Party that the meeting time had changed. So from now on, we'll get Rip and Richie to update the calendar with this too shortly. He hasn't updated the November calendar quite yet, but hopefully he will get to it shortly. So the Liberty of Plenty meeting up in Spartanburg is the first Thursday of the month, and that will be at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In tomorrow night up in Spartanburg. That's November the 3rd, I believe. So bear that in mind and make your way out there if you possibly can. Sorry that there was some confusion over the announcement. Okay, going back here, let's talk some more about theonomy a little bit. Some have said, loosely quoting Nigel Lieb, that theonomists are trying to seize power and then kidnap all non-reformed babies and indoctrinate them. Aside from how offensive I consider that charge to be, most American babies have already been kidnapped and indoctrinated. The culprit, the government school system, also known as the Pagan Seminary, and the means, the school buses. Yes, indeed. The Pagan Seminary compulsory attendance rules. These things require people to send their kids to a government indoctrination center called the Pagan Seminary, also euphemistically called a public school, and there they become indoctrinated after being kidnapped on school buses. Good point. It makes obviously it's a little bit, it's not an exact kidnapping case because the parents voluntarily send their kids there. They're complicit in the sin. But nevertheless, the indoctrination still occurs, and the effect is exactly the same as being just rawly kidnapped and indoctrinated. So, good comment, good quotation there. Have to agree. Now, somebody are going to be wondering, well, why in the world, wouldn't you want the state to enforce God's law, like Greg Bonson said on the dust cover jacket of Theonomy and Christian Ethics? Well, the reason is this: I do not share Dr. Bonson's view that the state is there to punish criminals, evildoers, per Romans 13, according to what God thinks is evil. This is the fundamental difference between the liberty of conscience perspective and the theonomic perspective. If we believe that the ideal purpose of the state is to actually punish evildoers that God thinks are evil, then we're going to have a very different perspective than if we believe the state punishes evildoers, that is, those who it thinks are evil. And that's where the difference comes in between my perspective, the liberty of conscience perspective, and somebody like Dr. Greg Bonson, who is undoubtedly a great scholar and a man that everyone should read just because he's so bright and lucid on the scriptures. The problem is presuppositions often lead you down logical blind alleys to logically poor reason conclusions. I think the consistency of logic is there in theonomy very much. I think they start with certain presuppositions, like the state is there to uphold God's law. The state's there to do what's good for Christians and others. The state's there to benefit Christians and then punish those who do evil. I think that presupposition leads to all sorts of egregious errors. Now, they might say this, in all fairness, they might say the same thing about me, in my view, that my presuppositions lead me to various errors. I will say this much about the theonomists. They are very consistent. I think, like the liberty of conscience perspective, they have a logically worked out and thoroughgoing system of theology of public policy. But I think that, and I think too, that it agrees with the liberty of conscience perspective on the vast majority of issues, so that the difference between theonomists and liberty of conscience folks in terms of application of laws are quite often very small, very, very, very similar on what they would suggest that the state should do or shouldn't do. So there's a lot of overlap, maybe as much, I've guessed in the past, as 80% overlap. And that's why people who are of a theonomic perspective are going to love to read my new book when it comes out, or even my current book, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. They may not agree with everything in there, but they'll still heartily recommend it to others simply because so much of it, the vast majority in their mind, is right on the money. Of course, some of us think it's 100% on the money, but we're biased. We have our own perspective because we wrote the book. Anyway, let's go on to a couple other quotations from the research staff. I fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live at least a while, and dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all in the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom, said William Wallace in Braveheart. Interesting quotation. Are we willing to fight for liberty? This is a great question to ask today. I don't think most people are willing to fight for liberty. I think they're scared. And I think they get fearful because they're comfortable. And right now there's a lot of security. In fact, George Bush is about to make you safe from avian bird flu, spending $7.1 billion on the project. That's what he wants, at any rate. And you're going to be so much safer from terrorists, aren't you? Yes, I don't think so. I think he's moving us into a totalitarian kind of state where we have military rule. I think that's where it's going. It's not going the other way towards liberty and security. It's going towards tyranny and oppression. And that's the thing I fear the most here. Here is saving the bridge to nowhere. Once Republicans were in power, they started spending money even faster than Democrats did. Big spender Ted Stevens responded to Senator Tom Coburn's, and we talked about this guy about a week or so ago. Good suggestion to kill a bridge to nowhere with a tantrum in the Senate floor. He threatened to resign and be taken out if you're on a stretcher. Good, Senator Stevens, please go. I'll even help carry the stretcher. And unfortunately, Congress has an unwritten code. Don't threaten other congressmen. That's a loot. The Senate reprimanded Coburn by voting 82 to 15 to save the bridge to nowhere. That's what ABC's John Stossel says on October 26, 2005. What a bunch of nonsense. Congress. I mean, give me a break. It's just so bizarre. This stuff is just stupid. Stupid stuff that goes on in the Congress. Anyway, thanks largely to Bob Schultz of the We the People Foundation and to them, the We the People Foundation and the Internet, Americans in every walk of life nationwide are becoming increasingly aware of the Internal Revenue Service and Department of Justice's outright refusal to cite federal law that specifically requires Americans' citizens to pay income tax or for employers to withhold income taxes for their employees. I know this may sound utterly incredible to those of you now learning of this, but to date and after many attempts to get federal authorities to publicly address the question, federal authorities have steadfastly refused to answer this very reasonable request. To put the matter to rest, it would be such a simple thing to cite the law if such a law exists, and logically follows that the deliberate refusal of the U.S. authorities to respond accordingly means they cannot. It is as simple as that. Neil Cavuto on Fox News interviewed Bob Schultz recently, where he told Cavuto God and everybody else tuned in that he had stopped filing income taxes a year ago. Schultz boasted he could not be successfully prosecuted, but as a lightning rod as he is, a vengeful federal government might very well target Schultz with a corrupt federal judge specifically picked for the job. Remember what happened to the Waco survivors. They are still in prison despite the protests of the jury that intended to acquit them. And that's a sad, sad case of affairs. A little bit further on down the article, it says, the silence from the federal government to that question is deafening and remains so. What is the law that requires them to pay the income tax in the first place? Consider this. We now have millions of very angry Americans unemployed and underemployed all over this nation due to the Republican-sponsored enactment of the North American Free Trade Agreement and the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, GATT and NAFTA, that were signed into law by President Bill Clinton against his own Democratic Party wishes. The unemployed and underemployed of this nation are barely surviving month to month, and average household credit card debt is now $9,000 and climbing. Now, this is all a bunch of whining a little bit. I mean, come on. Anyway, all right. Bankruptcies are escalating and home foreclosures are skyrocketing nationwide. There are a lot of very angry and disenfranchised Americans roaming the streets out there who are suffering a substantial reduction of their former standard of living and their ability to provide adequately for their families. You know, this is a lot of whining and melodramatic stuff. Folks, it's not. Well, at least it's not that way in Greenville. Now, somebody can enlighten me that there are these rogues or bunches of people, packs of people roaming as rogues in the streets and angry and bitter and stuff like that. I mean, come on. You know, somebody may get upset that they lose their job at first. That's fair enough to offshoring or something else. But they do eventually, the vast majority of them do eventually find some other kind of work to do. That's my understanding. Someone can enlighten me if I'm mistaken. 244-9904 is the phone number. And you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. I want to remind you to protect your property. Sign the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition by going to tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net. Under the Related Media tab, scroll down there, and you'll find a link to sign in 30 seconds or less the petition to protect your private property and to protect or promote in South Carolina the idea that fundamental rights are God-given, that they come antecedent to the state. The state can't grant those rights or take them away. It seems like we've forgotten these very basic truths, unfortunately, today in our day and age. Also want to remind you on that particular page that the Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, the Times Examiner features outstanding true conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. And what's best about it is you can get a subscription for an entire year for only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. You can email, you can call them at 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. 0576 to start your subscription. $25 in-state, $27 out-of-state. Hard to beat at being delivered directly to your door for that price, folks. Also, if you want to place an ad in the Times Examiner, call David directly at 864-859-6817. That's 864-859-6817, and start an ad soon to help the paper and to help your business. Okay, we were sent a few interesting stories by the Libertarian Christian site, especially from Brian Morton, who runs the site. And this is one he picked off of LouRockwell.com by Charlie Reese called Keep the Canary Alive. We like Charlie Reese columns from time to time. Very good stuff. Charlie Reese says this: Congress has finally did something right, and we should all applaud. The Senate and the House passed a law that shields gun manufacturers from politically motivated lawsuits. I just read a rant by a liberal columnist on the subject, and as usual in his hysteria, he got the facts wrong. The new law, which President Bush is expected to sign, does not exempt gun manufacturers from lawsuits. If they produce a defective product that causes injury, they can still be sued. All the new law does is put them on the level playing field with every other manufacturer. You hear a lot about the gun lobby, mainly the National Rifle Association, of which I am proud to be a life member. There is also, however, anti-gun lobby that over time has masqueraded under different names. Its goal is to abolish the private ownership of firearms. The lobby doesn't openly admit it, but that's its aim. With rare exceptions in few cities and states with no decent American should live, the anti-gun lobby has failed miserably through the democratic process. If the lobby was honest, which it is not, it would simply seek to repeal the Second Amendment. Instead, it tries to roundabout ways to accomplish the goal of disarming the populace. Lawsuits against gun manufacturers were intended to bankrupt the companies. These lawsuits were so ridiculous that if we had a decent class of judges, they would have been thrown out without even a hearing. A mayor in New Orleans some years ago sued gun manufacturers in an attempt to blame them for the city's sorry crime rate. Other suits try to blame the manufacturers for the actions of criminals and individual cases. Isn't that stupid? I'm telling you. But guns aren't the... People selling people guns does not increase the crime rate. That decreases the crime rate. And gun manufacturers aren't responsible for being criminals in society. It comes from the heart of man. We know that from the Christian worldview, but yet these other people that hold a materialistic worldview, see, they want to impose sin as an external corrupting force that just gets in under people's skin or something. Just pagan. It's a wrong-headed, non-Christian worldview. We don't agree. Anyway, before America's exceedingly excessive number of lawyers corrupted the civil court system, the principles involved in the liability were simple and logical. You can't be held liable for something over which you have no control. A manufacturer has no control or even knowledge of the behavior of the end user of his product. The fact that these lawsuits were politically motivated is shown by the absence of such suits against other manufacturers. No one has sued Ford Motor Company because some Ford owner used his car to rob banks or kidnap children or run down pedestrians. Nor should you be able to sue Smith & Wesson because some crackhead uses one of its pistols to commit murder. As I said, all of these lawsuits should have been immediately dismissed, but because of the low quality of so many judges, many of them were not. Even when the manufacturers win, as they have so far, the legal costs are exorbitant. And that was the strategy of the anti-gun lobby, to bleed the companies with endless lawsuits. America's gun manufacturers produce some of the highest quality products in the world. They are safe. Manufacturers sell to wholesalers, who sell to retailers, who, in turn, sell to individual customers. Some of these suits tried to blame the manufacturers for the actions of the retailers. That was stupid on its face. All gun retailers in the United States are licensed and regulated by the federal government, and that's one of the main problems, by the way. Agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms have the authority to walk into any retailer at any time without notice and thoroughly inspect all the records and inventory. If any retailer is engaged in hanky-panky, and the overwhelming majority are not, that is the fault and responsibility of the federal government, not of the manufacturer. To buy the anti-gun ploy would be holding General Motors responsible for the behavior of every used car salesman who sold a second-hand GM car. Responsibility and control of the actions of gun retailers lie squarely with the federal government and retailers themselves, not with the manufacturers. And it's unfortunate that it has anything to do with the federal government, but so be it. Machiavelli once remarked that the Swiss were the most armed and free people in Europe. When the day comes that your government tells you it is forbidden for you to own and keep a firearm, you will no longer be living in a free country. A government that is afraid of its own citizens is undemocratic and authoritarian. The Second Amendment is the canary that monitors our freedom. When it dies, freedom dies. Even if you don't wish to own a firearm, then you should join the National Rifle Association to defend the Second Amendment against those who want the government to have a monopoly on force. Yes, it's our ultimate check. And although Charlie Reese didn't go quite so far as I would have liked to see him do it by go ahead and saying, look, this is our ultimate check to literally assail the corruptors of the Constitution, the corruptors of our principles of freedom and liberty in this country, that's what it's for. You shoot at them, not at deer or anything else. That's the Second Amendment is for, folks, to guard our liberties against the intrusions of the oppressive state. But in general, he did a great job here pointing out the veracity of the whole matter and the insanity of trying to, you know, sue these gun manufacturers just because they got deep pockets, which is effectively why. And because the real reason is to get rid of guns, these leftist types. Well, here is another article sent up by the LibertarianChristians.org site, Brian Morton, and it's also off of Lou Rockwell. The Founding Fathers by Ray McMakin. The term Founding Fathers does much to mislead us about the origins of American government. The term has long been used in a quasi-religious way in which invocation of the will of the Founding Fathers is supposed to inspire awe and obedience to whatever point one happens to be making. The Founding Fathers wanted, etc. While it is expected that the use of the term will be to mind names like Washington, Hamilton, Adams, Jefferson, such vague images of men from the misty past tend to create an image of unanimity among all parties, ignoring the violent disagreements between them during the early years of the Republic. The invocation of the Founding Fathers as a unified group is singularly uncritical of the Constitution and godlike in their wisdom is quite convenient in creating myths of American exceptionalism. While today we lament the loss of American consensus on the virtues of liberty, we can at least take refuge in the thought that in days long past the American government and Founding Father who created it respected the liberties of the people. The big fly in the ointment of this story is the state of American politics during the 1790s, an era of consistent growth in government power that produced some of the most tyrannical policies and apocalyptic rhetoric in American political history. John Furling's short and entertaining book from last year, Adams vs. Jefferson, The Tumultuous Election of 1800, offers an excellent and accessible treatment of the struggle between Adams' Federalists and Jefferson's Republicans. And that's a different kind of Republican, by the way. It actually became Democrat later on, not the Republican Party of Lincoln. Furling presents his story with admirable even-handedness, and this is not surprising given Furling's excellent biography of John Adams, which was neither abuses nor romanticizes its subject. In Adams vs. Jefferson, Furling gives Jefferson similarly fair treatment. He provides a sympathetic narrative found in Jefferson's nullification doctrine and Jefferson's radicalism in opposing the centralized federal agenda. While this title names only Adams and Jefferson, the dynamic in Furling's book is between three men, Adams, Jefferson, and Hamilton. Adams disliked Jefferson. Jefferson was suspicious of Adams, and both loathed Alexander Hamilton. Such grave political differences were no doubt partly the product of the fact that Thomas Jefferson was not at the Constitutional Convention of 1787, and not surprisingly, Jefferson had never become entirely comfortable with the new Constitution. As long as it was being applied properly, he believed the Constitution could be a helpful tool, but it could only complement the excellent and established traditions of the individual state constitutions that had long served the United States well. So at any rate, he goes on to talk a bit more about the anti-federalists and the contentions that there were between the Founding Fathers. It's good for us to remember this because there wasn't a unified spirit back then. There was a lot of rancorous conversation, and there were people on both sides of many issues, and the Constitution was a great compromise, and it was a truly wise compromise in many respects. Not as good as the Articles of Confederation. I think it was a move towards tyranny, a small step, unfortunately, towards tyranny, but compared to what we have today, my goodness, it was a wonderful document promoting liberty compared to the squalor of interventionism and statism which we now face in America today. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Time for the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864 844-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to Homeschooler Friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, the second day of November 2005. This is the last half hour of today's show. If you have a phone call, you'd like to talk with us about any of these issues we're discussing today, do give us a ring at 864-244-9904. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Well, if you're still making your way out to work, we want to check the weather for you, and here it is.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 55 degrees. Downtown 56 degrees, Anderson 53, Clemson 54. Today mostly sunny, highs in the lower 70s, and northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Thomas Jefferson: "Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God."
Yes, indeed. A famous quote and well worth quote reiterating from time to time. Well, here is a story sent up by the research staff called Exterminating White People by Selwyn Duke. Exterminating White People by Selwyn Duke, November 1st on newswithviews.com. It has long been an assertion of mine, he says, that there's only one difference between Adolf Hitler and some of the misbegotten souls who lurk among us, means. I don't know that I subscribe to the notion that power corrupts, but I know that it releases inhibitions, causing one's true colors to shine through. Inhibitions, however, don't seem to be double one Mr. Dr. Cambon, the Raleigh, North Carolina activist, bookstore owner, and former professor at North Carolina State University, advocated the extermination of white people while speaking in a pro-black media forum at Howard Law School in an event that was covered in its entirety by C-SPAN. This esteemed molder of young minds contended that whites have an international plantation for blacks, making every white person on earth a plantation master. He continued, "You're either supporting white people in the process of death or you're for African liberation." Cambon expanded upon the transgressions of white devils and emphatically promulgated a solution, saying, "White people have retina scans. They have what they call racial profiling, DNA banks, and they are monitoring our people to try to prevent the one person from coming up with the one data, one idea." Well, you know, this is terrible. Can you imagine? I mean, this kind of guy not only does not have a Christian worldview, he is sadly misled and deceived. Not only do we not own a plantation, none of us are interested, few of us, at least here at the Christian Worldview Show, are interested in any way in controlling the lives of black people. We want black people to be left alone in the same way we want white people to be left alone. We want liberty for all people, period. And it's pathetic that these kind of people come up with these ideas of exterminating any particular race, whether it's white or black or anything else. So sad to hear that the North Carolina State University professor has gone overboard like that in his ridiculous mentality, his sinister and sinful way of thinking. Okay, there is no terrorist threat, says Carl F. Warden. No terrorist threat. That's what he says. Before I tell you about the terrorist threat, I got to remind you about the Patriot meeting coming up on Saturday. I almost forgot, and I was reminded at the break, and I was told, look, you haven't mentioned this, mention it. Remember this Saturday, the Patriot meeting, Carolina Patriots, on Woodruff Road at the Prime Sirloin Restaurant right across from the Greenville Mall. Starts at 12:30, and then that's for lunch. At 1 o'clock till 3 o'clock, there'll be speakers, and there'll be people meeting about American constitutional history, talking about taxation issues and other liberty-minded issues. Hope you can attend Carolina Patriots meeting this Saturday. Remember, the Liberty of Plenty meeting is in Spartanburg tomorrow night, not last night. That was an old ad. Somehow we didn't get the update included in our regular routine of reading things, and therefore the Liberty of Plenty meeting has been changed. It was not last night. It's tomorrow night at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In at 6:30 p.m. Hope you can attend that meeting. All right, now let's go back to Carl Warden. There is no terrorist threat. January 28, 2004. Following the coordinated attacks orchestrated on the 9/11/2001, in which passenger aircraft were hijacked by a small group of Muslim extremists to destroy the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York and to damage the Pentagon, there have been no significant terror attacks that have occurred in the entire United States since that time. There have been no bombings of American nightclubs, movie theaters, grocery stores, or shopping malls. There have been no assaults by gunmen on those attending NFL football games or any other sports events. There have been no significant attacks on any American citizens in any public or private sector since 9/11. In the meantime, both the northern and southern borders of the United States have remained largely undermanned and unguarded by the United States government, allowing anyone to enter, smuggling anything from drugs to Russian-made SA-7 portable anti-aircraft missiles to any other munitions domestic terrorists might want to obtain and use. In point of fact, no terrorist threat even exists, or ever has existed, in the mainland of the United States. If that were true, terrorists would have committed violent acts since 9/11/2001, and it hasn't happened, not one. I want to disabuse my readers from believing the incessant cacophony internal terrorist threat issued by this amoral government. It's shouldn't we say immoral? Anyway, it's a big fat lie. If terrorists could inflict their harm upon us, they would have done it by now. The pundits and the government tell America that the terrorists want to inflict another catastrophic attack similar to 9/11 2001, somehow dispensing with the obvious and massive opportunities terrorists have to inflict suffering all over America in surgical strikes. Have you ever toured America like I have? I've lived in every niche of this massive nation. Really. I know it by heart. We are a nation of soft targets for terrorists. Unlike Israel, we have no armed guards at checkpoints. We have no suicide bombers. There are no metal detectors in movie theaters or nightclubs. Unlike Israel, we have no heavily armed guard with machine guns on the street looking for suspected bombers or gunmen. Why? There is no internal American terrorist threat. There never has been. If such a threat existed, it would have played out on our city streets. In truth, we had a small coordinated band of Muslim misfits who hijacked passenger aircraft and did some damage to both buildings and killed citizens with no backup plan. There was no backup plan to invade the United States, and incredibly, there was no backup plan to continue to further terrorist attacks. It was all over one shot. Think about that and consider what has happened in the aftermath of the basic liberties of every American. The terrorists won, and only because our own government, led by George W. Bush, let them wag us. We citizens are fools, he says. And here's a story that somewhat takes off from that. From the Medical Economics magazine, page 24, this was the October 21st, 2005 edition. Government snooping, will doctors get reform? This is by Wayne J. Guglielmo. Congress is set to breathe new life into a law that, in part at least, civil libertarians and many doctors would rather see go away. The law is the USA Patriot Act of 2001, passed during the first nervous weeks after 9/11. In enacting it, lawmakers wanted to give agencies like the FBI tools they needed to intercept and obstruct terrorism. But current sections of the law, which are set to expire at the end of the year, tread heavily on constitutionally guaranteed civil liberties, critics say. Of special interest or special concern to doctors and others who want to preserve the confidentiality is Section 215. This gives the FBI permission to demand doctors' patient records and many other tangible things in their offices. Although agents must first get the green light from a special judge, that typically involves little more than certifying that the records they seek are relevant to a terrorist or related investigation. Any patients under investigation are likely to be aware of that fact. Nor, under Section 215, are you allowed to tell them the agency can't target U.S. citizens who've done nothing more sinister than attend an anti-government political rally, but such First Amendment rights don't apply to non-U.S. citizens. In fact, says the American Civil Liberties Union, foreign nationals may be spied on simply for visiting certain websites or reading certain books. This June, the AMA's House of Delegates called upon Congress to let Section 215 sunset as scheduled. Short of that, they said the delegates, lawmakers should broaden judicial discretion, put patients who are under investigation on notice, restrict the gag rule, and mandate certain public disclosures by the U.S. Attorney General. The Senate has incorporated some of these reforms in an authorization bill passed this summer. At any rate, the reforms that the Senate has made are modest, and they may not be a sure bet. Congress may first reconcile the Senate legislation with competing House bill, which contains a few of the checks and balances doctors and others want. Will the final bill tilt more towards the Senate or the House? No one knows for sure, of course, but Libin thinks the unanimity of the Senate compared to the divided House vote is a hopeful sign. So anyway, these Section 215 changes are problematic for doctors. The whole Patriot Act in general is problematic because the Patriot Act basically degrades our liberties that were guaranteed under the Bill of Rights, and that's a sham, and that's something we have to oppose, folks. You heard it right here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we are going to go ahead and jump to our quarter of the hour break, and we'll be back for the last segment in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-244-9904. 201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to the final segment of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this for this second day of November 2005. Glad you joined us once again for our show today. If you have any questions or comments on some of the things we've been discussing, dial 864-244-9904, and we'll be happy to entertain your phone call. Here, Carl F. Warden also has another article worth reading that the research staff found and sent up. This one is called Being Lied into War. Being Lied into War. We were lied to into the war in Iraq. There is simply no denying it now. The Bush administration will still insist they had bad intelligence, while at the same time they were persecuting people like Joseph Wilson, and by extension his wife, Valerie Plame Wilson, an ambassador for Wilson's revelation in a New York Times op-ed piece that George W. Bush's claim in his 2003 State of the Union address that Iraq was trying to buy yellowcake uranium from the nation of Niger was entirely false. Ambassador Wilson, a man of immense honor and credibility in this nation with in contracts worldwide, and a man who was ambassador to Iraq during the buildup of the Gulf War, Desert Storm under Senior President Bush's 41, wrote in the New York Times op-ed piece that the documents alleging Iraq's attempt to buy uranium from Niger were forged, and no such attempt by Iraq had been attempted. And and we read this guy's story yesterday on the show, as you recall. In the months leading up to the 3/19/03 attack on Iraq, others like United Nations Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, a former U.S. Marine, were also under attack by the Bush administration, alleging Ritter was on the payroll of Saddam Hussein himself. None of the allegations against Ritter ever proved true. In the aftermath, and in hindsight, Scott Ritter was trying desperately to stop the United States from making what has turned out to be the worst global screw-up by the United States in the United States government history, next to the Vietnam disaster in terms of needless loss of life. We the people of the United States were told, no, assured, that the State of the Union address, and the State of the Union address, that Saddam Hussein, dictator of Iraq, not only had massive stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, but that he had also acquired nuclear matter from Niger to build nuclear weapons, and that Saddam was planning to use those weapons against the United States and our allies like Israel imminently. After our invasion of Iraq, our troops discovered no such stockpiles or such planning. The significance of the recent indictments against Lewis Scooter Libby, chief advisor to the Vice President Dick Cheney, clearly point to a Bush administration policy of punishing and silencing anyone who attempted to discredit anyone of national credibility who might bring into question the president's allegations against Iraq. Previous to these outrageous acts, the Bush administration had been pressuring the Central Intelligence Agency to produce evidence of Saddam's alleged stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction and nuclear capabilities. In real terms, the Bush guys were trying to force the CIA to produce evidence against Iraq that just was not there. Afterward, President Bush replaced CIA Director Tenet with crony Goss, who began firing and replacing any CIA agents and officials who might have a temerity to tell the truth about Iraq and Iraq's true weapon capabilities. To say the CIA has been gifted or gutted for political passion is an understatement, and it's completely against the interests of the people of the United States. In their zeal to discredit an honorable and patriotic man like Joseph Wilson, the Bush administration intentionally leaked to the press that Joseph Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame Wilson, was a CIA employee. Journalist Robert Novak published that information in his column, and that public information totally destroyed Valerie Plame Wilson's cover as an NOC, non-official cover, CIA operative who was engaged in trying to ascertain the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction worldwide. To understand how important and sensitive CIA operative Valerie Plame Wilson was, you need to know her official CIA designation. A CIA agent with an official cover is a CIA agent assigned to an embassy as something other than as a CIA agent. But everybody knows they are an intelligence agent under the cover of diplomatic immunity. But NOC is a non-official cover CIA agent who poses as a business person or something other, anything but a covert CIA agent. If they are discovered by an enemy source, they are often tortured for their information and eventually executed. In addition, anyone in their contact is immediately arrested, interrogated, tortured, and often executed. As a NOC that was outed by Robert Novak, not only was Valerie Plame Wilson in jeopardy, but also were people worldwide who had contact with her in so many various ways. At this time, we do not know how much damage was done to Valerie Plame Wilson's intelligence network, but be assured it was a serious and deep before all the other players could be warned to run. Which brings us to the supreme question of the day, which is, why is Valerie Plame ousted in the first place? What did Karl Rove, President Bush's senior advisor, and Lewis Scooter Libby, senior advisor to Vice President Cheney, hope to gain in terms of damage control by revealing to reporters that Joseph Wilson's wife was a CIA employee? There is no question now that they did out to her two reporters. But why did they think doing that would silence Ambassador Joseph Wilson? Wilson had already published his article, so that was already U.S. news. So why did Rove and Libby go out of their way to reveal to the press that Wilson's wife was CIA? What did those idiots hope to gain or recoup by doing that, even if they didn't know Valerie Plame Wilson was a NOC CIA employee? In their feeble little minds, did they think revealing Valerie Plame Wilson as CIA employee would somehow impeach the credibility of former Ambassador Joseph Wilson and silence him from publishing anything further? I just don't get it. What I just don't know is that Valerie Plame Wilson is now useless as a CIA NOC operative forever. I hope she can type and make decent copy, because clerical is the only thing that comes to mind with regard to her future employment with the CIA. But what we all have to ask ourselves is why the Bush guys went after Joseph Wilson, and by extension his wife, with such viciousness. Hey, if I was a good-hearted president and I found out I was wrong about Saddam Hussein about trying to buy nuclear matter, I'd be relieved to know that. But if I deliberately told Americans a fat lie to get them to accept my prosecuting an illegal, undeclared war in Iraq, then I might find that Wilson's discovery that the whole story about Niger was false to be a threat that I need to deal with. Get it now? In the final analysis, it was the Bush administration's actions in response to Joseph Wilson's op-ed in the New York Times that gave them away. People in search of the truth don't want to do what Rove and Libby did. If a good intelligence comes in that proves that what you thought was the threat really isn't, you feel relieved. But if you're deliberately told the American people a lie to get deliberately tell the American people a lie to get permission to wage an illegal war, and some former ambassador reveals a major part of your lies was a lie, you see him as a threat and someone to discredit. And now you know the truth. According to Carl F. Warden, being lied into war. Good article this morning. Enjoyed reading that one. I'm sure you enjoyed hearing it as well. And it has, it's more than a kernel of truth in there. It seems like we have been or were entirely lied to by this administration and brought into this crazy aggressive war without any true purpose other than to promote the glory and honor of George W. Bush. I guess if that's truly a purpose that we can applaud and stand behind. I don't think so. I'm not too pleased when I hear these kinds of things. It's a very sad state of affairs, as a matter of fact, to see just what's happened in this great country. The founding fathers certainly are turning in their graves to think about all this kind of nonsense that goes on day after day. All right. I was reading through the Libertarian Libertarian professor's discussion list, and it's very interesting stuff that comes across this list. Now, these are all professors who are libertarians, but a vast majority of the people on the list are not Christians. In fact, I only know there's been one in the past who's been an evangelical, and also maybe a couple. Now I think about it, I'm not sure they're on the list anymore. There's some Roman Catholics there, but most of them are pro-death libertarians, unfortunately. Anyway, Randall Holcomb is one of my favorite guys on the list, and Randy Holcomb is a professor at Florida State University. He's done some excellent work and research. He's a top-notch economist, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought I'd just read you a little bit of what he had to say with regard to markets and urban sprawl. He says, background, after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, it seems to me that one of the places former central planners have gone and met a welcome reception is urban and regional planning, where smart growth makes central planning and land use respectable. Two of the big things that smart growthers push for is the higher population densities and more use of mass transit in place of automobile travel. There's a growing literature, still in the minority though, arguing that markets should determine the land use patterns, not government planning, and that most people live in single-family detached homes and drive their own cars because that's the lifestyle they prefer. I just read an advertisement for a new book, Zoned Out, by Jonathan Levine, that argues that urban sprawl is a result of government interference with markets through zoning laws, subsidized roads, etc., and that if government hadn't intervened, we'd have enough smart growth. We'd have smart growth with people living in higher-density housing and taking mass transit. So smart growth isn't really the market-oriented pattern of land use, and urban sprawl is a result of government intervention. I'd be interested in anybody's reaction to this argument, he says, either from a professional point of view or a personal point of view. Would people really choose to give up their cars if government policies didn't push them to drive? Would people really choose to live in apartments rather than detached single-family houses if government didn't interfere with their choices? This literature has always gone to the market failure route before. The market fails or land use issues, so government needs to intervene with planning to correct for the market failures. Now, Levine is claiming the government that has caused undesirable and land use patterns and that smart growth is the answer. Any reactions or responses are kind and welcome. And, my view is that government is the problem, not the solution. The state intervention has caused problems. I'm not really sure, though, like he's asking here, would people really choose to give up their cars if government policies didn't push them to drive? I don't think so, but, it's kind of hard to speculate. Would people really choose to rather live in apartments rather than single detached homes if government didn't interfere with their choices? Well, it seems to me that people live in apartments and take the public transit because it becomes the most expedient, efficient thing for them to do, not because they like those modes of transportation. It's a fact of life. When you live in a high-cost area like New York, it's overtaxed and so forth. It makes sense to not drive your car. In other places where the costs aren't so great, people choose that option. So I think it's probably a rather simple response there. I'll be interested to see what others have to say on the list. But that's just some food for economic thought this morning. And we're glad you joined us for this edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And we look forward to having you back again tomorrow morning at the same place for the next segment or the next edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.